your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me is Tony Godling from Bristol, England. Welcome back, Tony.
Hi, George, and hello, Austin.
I'll tell you what, we've had that bombing, that mad bombing, finally resolved in his committing suicide in his SUV. That was dramatic, say the least.
Well, yes, but you see, I mean, I'm afraid I have to doubt that, because what we're seeing, if you think about what happened Friday evening over in France as well, is a lot of these so-called terrorists are just being killed by the authorities. Now, if I was a member of the authorities, I'd be looking to maim these people. I mean, obviously, you've got a hostage scenario, which is more dangerous. But there's really no excuse for killing suspects. This is not really what our authorities are there for. I mean, this is what means that they are better and, in fact, more important than organised criminals. Because what organised criminals kill people, and that means that then there is no possibility of them producing evidence and going to court, etc. So going through due legal process. What the authorities, whether it be police, whether it be security services, that's over here, is MI5, the anti-terror police, who, by the way, have completely taken over the crime scene and the whole area and the investigation in Salisbury from the local police. So the local police are now being completely pushed out of the way. So the FBI and the anti-terror police, people like this, are very good at killing people. Now, this is not what we need to maintain a rule of law and actually to maintain respect in our authorities. So what's happened in Austin is the same as happened in France, is we've ended up with dead suspects. So that means there can't be a court case, and I would suggest that you've really got a situation now where the authorities are looking to avoid these court cases by killing suspects and by issuing guidance to individual officers, firearms officers, these kinds of people, saying the best thing is just to blow them away, because then what they're doing is the same as an excuse. The person may have, be able to trigger another device. There are all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, the real reason is they just don't want to have to go to court.
Right. You know, that nerve gas thing over there, Portendown didn't even analyze anything, did they not, in England, in Salisbury?
Well, okay, so there's been very interesting developments. The most recent development I've seen is that in order to get the blood samples from the victims in hospital and to get it analysed properly, that is to say by the Office for the Abolition of Chemical Weapons, this is basically like the international body which is trying to completely wipe these things off from the face of the earth, a wonderful task, but how are they managing it? They're certainly not stopping the Israelis, the Brits, or the Americans from getting rid of these weapons. They seem to be stopping everybody else. But anyway, as part of that legal process, some very interesting statement was made, a really interesting statement by the Portendown analysts, by the scientists who have been looking at this so-called contamination, so-called murder attempt with this material. And that is, they say, Novichok or a similar substance. So what we're seeing here is that the government, press officers, etc., have been telling us this is Novichok. Yes, it's confirmed as Novichok, blah, blah. What the legal papers and the authorities who've been asked to provide evidence for that those blood samples to be taken are saying something different. They're saying it's something that could be closely related to Novichok. Now, do you know what nerve gas is closely related to the Novichok nerve agent?
What's that? A VX
It's something called VX. Absolutely, yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Done. And it's a very similar, I'm told, chemical formula. Now, VX was not invented by the Russians or by some spooky communist with a red star on his hat. It was invented by ICI, Imperial Chemical Industries, a British company, in 1952. And I would suspect, using information that was gathered from the Nazis after the Second World War. So that may have even been Nazi scientists collaborating with ICI at that time. I know there certainly was in the US. The British were also doing their best to collect Nazi scientists after the Second World War. So look, this may be potentially maybe VX, this stuff, but not Novichok at all, which would definitely make it more likely to have come actually from here in the UK. Now look, the whole thing is, what I would say is, I mean, this is the stuff I've been being accused of, and you, George, as being conspiracy theorists, really ever since 9/11, and possibly even before that. That is to say, mixing up speculation facts. I mean, you know, you and I know very well many of the so-called facts we've been told about the September 11th attacks aren't facts at all. Things like the, you know, discovery of nanothermite, the non-appearance of the US Air Force, you know, these basic facts to do with the September 11th attacks, which many people haven't been told. But this is the exact same thing as the media has been doing. The whole of the London media, with this Novichok Salisbury incident, they've been saying that, well, basically they've been mixing facts and speculation. So they've been saying that we're not 100% sure that Russia did this, and then they're also saying Russia did this, definitely. Now, you cannot say those two same things at the same time, but that is exactly what they're saying. Boris Johnson, Theresa May, particularly, several Blairite Labour MPs as well, various people are saying this. Now, what that tells me is that these people are just lying. Okay, so if they were being honest, I mean, for example, Craig Murray has pointed this out, that the facts that we've now got from the Chemical and Biological Warfare Centre at Boughton Down, 10 minutes drive from Salisbury, actually totally contradict what the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has been saying. So he's been being given information by the civil service and the military about what's happened in Salisbury, and then he's just lied. He's saying they've told him this, when they haven't, they've told him something different. So this, what it does, is it just means that nobody can trust the British Foreign Secretary. When he says something now or in the future, we know it could easily just be a lie. And that's, I'm afraid, where we are now with the state of the respect or total disrespect that there is for the word of the British Foreign Secretary.
Right. I recently got a new domain called AmericanGladio.com. And I have a site up. And I'm tentatively planning on a symposium on the 5th of May up in Dallas. Okay? But on that date, the May 4th, 5th, and 6th is a National Rifle Association conference in the Dallas Convention Center. And
yeah.
I suspect there's going to be something major happen up there during that convention.
Well, there might possibly be, George.
There's going to be activists, you know, protesting for sure. See, got me.
Look, the thing is, I think what we're seeing here is there's been a fantastic, fascinating set of news stories over the last few months. I think it started at the beginning of the year. February, with The Guardian doing all these stories about Freemasonry and some serious investigation into the extent of which Freemasonry has penetrated public offices in Britain and the establishment and the state and the law enforcement system, you know, the criminal justice system, judges, police, prosecutors, lawyers, all these people, many of them are cross, you know, Freemasonry is in there. So we've seen that, and we've seen a whole load of other exposés in the last few weeks about starting with this story about Cambridge Analytica, but then moving to look at in the House of Commons last Wednesday, one of the, I think it was a Scottish MP, mentioned the parent company of Cambridge Analytica, which has been very critical apparently, because apparently they use Facebook to help Trump. Now, big deal. Of course, we know that Hillary had all sorts of, you know, was doing similar sorts of things with other organisations. But what the interesting thing was the closeness of the parent company of Cambridge Analytica to the Conservative Party, with all the senior figures being Conservative, or many of the senior figures in Strategic Communication Labs, the parent company, being Tories. So all of a sudden this is kind of backfired in their faces, and people are now starting to talk, George, about this whole data mining industry. So that means effectively hacking into using things like, you know, when you have a Facebook app, it says to you, please, do you want to sign in using Facebook, and you say yes. What you're doing there is you're handing your Facebook account as an open book to someone completely different. And then that person can then suck out all your information, all your content, all the things you care about, know about, and your family, etc., and then sell it on the open market.
Right.
That's what
right.
these data mining companies do. So it's not just Facebook they use. Google is massive at this. Anyone that's got Gmail, all their Google things that they write about in their emails, their, you know, thoughts, their trends, their loves, you know, their interests, is being marketed. And that stuff is used to profile tens, hundreds of millions of people across the Western world. And then that is then sold to, whether it might be a political campaign, political party, or a military. Because we go one step up from Strategic Communication Labs, who work on elections. And you can then start talking about Peter Thiel and Alex Karp and Palantir Services. Now, Palantir, what they do is they provide services not to a political party, but to governments and to the military. They've just won a £500 million contract for the Pentagon, Palantir have. So these data mining companies are able to bend minds right across the planet. They can basically win you an election. I mean, already know that Google can do that just by skewing the results. So I think it's been a fascinating week to see British ambassadors to Uzbekistan.
Just recently,
He put a headline out, George, and he said, "The deep state breaks surface."
Yeah.
The deep state breaks surface, which is, I think, is fascinating. Well, to see this stuff all coming out in the mainstream, some of it. Yeah.
The ICO just raided over there recently, Cambridge Analytical. The Information Commissioner's Office raided them just recently and took a bunch of their records out. That's your 1984 stuff over in the UK. See?
Yeah, but they gave them several days' notice. So they would probably have just hidden or buried or encrypted anything they didn't want them to see.
Yeah. But that's going to be that woman that headed up that came over here one year to Bilderberg, wasn't it?
That's right. But the thing is, they're trying to focus on Cambridge Analytica, but there's loads more. There's the tip of the iceberg. And we're realising now that this focus on Cambridge Analytica is just a way of bashing Trump over the head.
That's
there's lots more to it. And I think that all of the intelligent people in the UK reading stuff, I mean, there's been some really good, brilliant stuff about Strategic Communication Labs and who they are, which is the parent company. So people are realising that actually what's happened is the press have just focused on this one thing, but actually it's all starting to unravel. They hoped it wouldn't, but it is.
Well, that budget that they submitted and recently signed, Trump signed, They gave to Congress 16 hours before they voted on it. It was over 2,200 pages long. It was 3 feet high of paper. No one's read it. Even Trump said nobody read it. And this country's out of control, you know?
Well, that's the way they love it, isn't it?
They plunder it. They plunder the Treasury that way. You know?
Yeah, so, yeah, you're right. It is out of control. There's all sorts of... I mean, effectively, it's your executive and civil service just, you know, basically controlling things and bamboozling the...
Oh, one thing I did find out, Tony, the information commissioner of the ICO, the information commissioner, is appointed by the Crown. It talks about in here the information commissioner is an independent official appointed by the Crown. That's not very independent, is it?
Well, of course it is. No, because the Crown, of course, has Crown immunity.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Exactly.
Many of these roads are leading back to Buckingham Palace.
Exactly.
And you know, this is where the establishment and Freemasonry is headquartered.
And the City of London is the money center, so they got it locked down pretty good over there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm also wondering about, you know, to what extent there's a lot of belligerence going on against for example, we just had this deal with the Saudis that the US has signed. The Brits signed another, you know, arms deal with them in exchange for investment, this kind of thing. There's also been this this big fuss again more this week with Putin. I mean, good God, he's been winning the election and then having our foreign secretary comparing him to Hitler.
Yeah, well, they phones him over there and congratulates him. They called hell from the Democrats here. Trump did on that.
I sort of love Trump when he does things.
Didn't we talk about it one time? They're dividing Trump and Putin. The New World Order can't have those two together. They'd be formidable enemies of the New World Order too.
That's right. That's what they're trying to do, George, most definitely.
Yeah, but you know, one thing about Trump, Tony.
We also had a similar sort of thing with North Korea.
Right.
With North and the South Koreans saying, well, let's organize some peace talks. They're not going through Tillerson and the State Department. They just go straight to Trump. And then Trump says yes. And suddenly, all of the neocons, all of the war hawks, the John Boltons of this world now, which is another horrendous story.
That should have never been appointed in there. Should have never been appointed in there.
They're all nixed by Trump speaking directly to the Koreans. So he's gone over their heads completely. They'll be fuming about that one too.
Yeah.
You know, just as they've been about him congratulating Putin. Now, there's nothing wrong with congratulating Putin on becoming president again. Because you do that. If you believe in democracy, that's what you do. Congratulations, you've won a democratic, free and fair election. But they can't bear to, because they hate him so much.
Yeah.
For being popular. They're not popular. The deep state in the UK and the United States is incredibly unpopular. They're a failure, complete failure financially. They're punishing their citizens, so their citizens don't like them. In Russia, it's the opposite story. You've got something like 3/4 of Russians think Putin is wonderful.
Right.
And, you know, that there's nowhere near that sort of comparison here in Britain with our leaders. They're jealous.
Yeah. This thing is getting very interesting. What you have anything on Syria lately? Is that building up? I think the Turks were in there with the Kurds, fighting the Kurds and other groups, other factions.
Literally last night, we didn't see it on the news, but there were celebrations all over Damascus. Because Damascus has been liberated.
Right.
The Western NATO Israeli backed terrorists. They've now been kicked out of Eastern Ghouta, and the Russians and the Syrians have done an amazing job, and they've pretty much now liberated their city. So there were celebrations. You know what I'd like to have seen? I'd like to see the BBC, CBS, and ABC all carrying those celebrations live. thank God we're now free from these terrorists. But of course they don't. They just ignore it. Because that's not what the media is there for. The media is now just there as a propaganda tool to lead the public by the nose, and the press, and the other press, and the politicians, all by the nose, into the next war. And that next war, they want, it seems pretty clear to me, and I was chatting to your Bruce Gagner over there. I don't know if you know him, but he runs this network against nuclear weapons and power.
Okay.
Against weapons in space.
Okay.
And he was explaining to me that there is a real push for war. You know, that's actually what they want, and particularly regime change in Russia. Because they see Russia as providing an example to the world that the Western model is a failure. And that's the main reason they don't like the Russians, is because Putin shows up how incompetent, how wicked, how corrupt our Western leaders are.
Yeah, you've got crony capitalism in there that has just perverted and corrupted everything it touches. And it's not,
in a way,
not good.
You know, George, I mean, I have to say, you know, if you and I were in positions of power, we may well be tempted to say, well, I'll tell you what, the public can go hang, let's use this position to make a load of money. And there is that aspect in human nature,
sure,
that wants to do that. And there is, there's one organisation, one institution that would stop that happening, and that is a confident and intelligent and independent press. And that is not happening anymore in the West, because what we've got is we've got a supine, obedient, pliable, propagandistic press that does what it's told to do, that doesn't ask questions. And that is so clear with this Salisbury case. I've never seen anything so ridiculous as we being told as the public to believe that this is some sort of conclusive attack by the Russian state, by Vladimir Putin, 2 weeks before the Russian presidential elections, and yet having no evidence whatsoever presented for that. And we're supposed to believe this? I mean, I think actually there are millions of people across Britain, in fact I know for a fact there are, who just don't believe a word of it, George.
Well, that's true, and Americans are waking up to this stuff too. And that's why Trump went into office. People had enough of the propaganda. And Hillary was a very weak candidate too, see.
Yeah. They're trying to build up a hysteria against Putin, but it's beginning to backfire. You know, there's no actual, I mean, just think about it from a military point of view. In what way is it in Britain's national interest to have a nuclear war with Russia? It's not.
No.
And there's no point in having a confrontation. We're in the situation now where we've got Brexit trundling down the tracks, right? We're going to be there very soon.
Right.
Russia is the country we desperately need a good trade deal with, not a nuclear war.
So they're providing natural gas to Western Europe. See.
That's right. This Nord Stream pipeline is extremely important.
It's...
But you see, there's this fear, isn't there? There's a fear amongst the elite who have squandered all the North Sea oil and gas, that sort of thing, and wasted all that as an opportunity. Although, of course, the Norwegians have. They've been very sensible with their sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah, they have one of the largest in the world there.
But they are scared to death that we will be, in fact, the public, people heating their homes in the winter, will be beholden to Putin. And that Putin will be able to say things like, "Okay, guys, you can have a you can heat your homes this winter," and actually the rulers of the West won't really have any say in it. Now they're scared of this kind of thing, anything to do with energy and control of energy. And you know, it just seems to me this whole business with Salisbury and the Skripal case. I mean, the other thing that's just coming out today is that apparently he wrote to Putin. Skripal did, saying, "Please can I come back to Russia because I miss my family." Well, he wasn't really enjoying himself in Salisbury. So you do wonder, is the British MI6, who are quite, to me, quite obviously behind this Salisbury incident, are they going to let him live? Because it may be that they don't want him to go back to Russia. It may be that Putin and the authorities in Russia would quite like him to go back, because maybe he can tell them a few interesting things. And so it might even be that he is helped to die in Salisbury, in the hospital, by MI6, so they can then ramp up the tension and say, oh, isn't it terrible, he's died. I wouldn't put that past them at all, George, because MI6 is not a James Bond kind of organisation at all. They are utterly ruthless. They're more an Alistair Crowley organisation. And by the way, he was supposed to have worked very closely with them in the 1930s and after the Second World War and 40s. You know, so I think we're looking at a very sinister, a very dangerous organisation that would do absolutely anything in order to ramp up tensions with Russia, because Russia is the only country at the moment, I think, that's really confident in the world and a democracy, because of course China is not. Although it's very rich and very confident, it's not democratic. You and I start talking in China about criticising our leader, and we'll find ourselves in the gulags.
Yeah. Well, Russia still is benevolent type of situation. It's still an authoritarian system, and it's not like here or in UK.
I didn't see when I was over there. Russia, yeah. I didn't find it authoritative. Yeah. I found it quite free and easy. I mean, of course, it's a largely rural country, and there's need for police and stuff like that. You've got people who are very intelligent. There's a very strong literary tradition, and they like writing about good or bad leadership. They've got a lot of respect for Putin as leader. They think he's a confident figure in the world. He's given them confidence in their own nation again, which I'm afraid I don't see that my leaders in Britain have given me any confidence in our nation. They've just dragged the name of Britain through the mud and caused a great embarrassment. In fact, I thought it was quite wonderful watching the Russian ambassador to Britain saying, well, after this incident, how is Britain going to communicate with us in the future? Because what you've done is you've done everything you possibly can to lose our respect. And they're right. This whole diplomatic language, to me, smacks of a bunch of spoiled kids who are spoiling for a fight now. Because they're actually losing ground. What they've started to do, and I think they've been doing this for a while, but they're doing it more than ever now, is because they've been beaten militarily in Ukraine, in Eastern Europe, and in Syria, particularly by the Russians, they're starting to act like spoiled children and almost sort of shout, scream, throw stones and spit at Putin and at Russia. But not only that, they're using their own war apparatus that has failed to do anything about Russia, and they're starting to use it on their own domestic population. So they're using these kind of mind-bending techniques that have been developed over the years to try and bend the minds of the enemy, to now try and bend the minds of their own population. And this is a pretty dark road that they've gone down, George.
Yes, it is. What were your impressions in the Pacific? You had such a nice trip, a couple of trips over there, haven't you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was particularly, New Zealand's a wonderful place, George, and they don't have many industries. There's just really farming and forestry. Farming and forestry, they have...
Sheep.
Well, no, there's more cattle now than sheep, actually.
There is? Really? Okay.
But a lot of milk production, dairy production. So you've got that. You've got tourism, which is a massive industry.
I bet it's massive.
It is. I mean, there's loads of people visit because it's such a beautiful country, and the people are so lovely, and they all speak English, which is great. On the opposite side of the planet, also the Maoris, the indigenous, are pretty well integrated, and many of the Maoris run the tourists and own the tourist industry, so they're doing quite well. And also the other industry is repairing the roads.
Okay.
It's a massive industry. I mean, we've also Christchurch, the earthquake is they've had to knock down half of Christchurch, George, because the buildings weren't safe, and they're rebuilding it all from scratch. It's like a war zone. So there's loads of work going on there, and the other thing is repairing the roads. They have something called the Number 2 Road, and that's on the South Island, which is like the, what we would call the A2 here in Britain, or I don't know what you call it. Interstate 2 or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, they had an earthquake on the South Island last year in Kaikoura, where the seabed rose 2 meters out of the sea.
My gosh!
All the people who had nice sort of cottages and looking out to the sea are suddenly now looking out into rock.
My gosh! My gosh!
The sea has disappeared off, you know, whatever, a quarter of a mile or a half a mile.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's pretty crazy. But anyway, when that earthquake happened, the Number 2 Road, which runs along the coast there, was completely smashed to bits along with the railway line.
Yeah.
And so they've taken something like, 8 months to repair it. And they finally kind of repaired the road just when we were there back in, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I saw it on the, maybe a month ago, actually, now. And so that would be, February 2018. Mm-hmm. And when I got back to the North Island, I saw on the TV, there's been a storm, and it's washed the road away again.
Oh, my gosh. Gosh.
Another 3 or 4 miles of road, which is not a road anymore. It's half of it's in the sea, and the other half has got tens of thousands of tons of rock on top of it. So they do have to spend a lot of time and effort in keeping their roads open, which is pretty difficult. All it takes is one storm or a cyclone or something to hit, and you find half the roads on the place are knocked out. Back in the day, I mean, we're talking about really early part of the last century, up until the 1970s and 60s, much of the transport in New Zealand was just coastal light, coastal vessels. So passengers and ships would be going around the coast and docking at the ports because they knew there's no point in building roads in this country because they don't last very long.
Right. Golly.
And also, obviously, flying. There's always been a lot of flying in New Zealand.
Are you still flying some yourself or what?
Well, I don't have a pilot's license, but I do fly around quite a bit one way or another. Yeah, actually, I've got a gliding license, George.
Okay.
But over there, there's quite a lot of little airfields, so people hop around in light planes quite a lot.
You've
got a very good domestic service, so you can get from all the different towns in the North Island to the South Island easily on Air New Zealand flights, and it's actually very quick, very efficient, and lovely flight. It's a great little airline. I'd never really flown on them much before, but that's how they have to have these, all the, the railway's pretty, it's, all it takes is one storm to knock the railway out. So the railway's kind of sometimes there and it's sometimes not. The roads on the South Island are pretty much the same, sometimes there, sometimes not. And so a lot of the coastal transport has to kind of kick in when there's one of these earthquakes or a major, what they call slips, where half a mountain falls on the road, then everything has to stop.
A very interesting thing was brought to me by a friend today. It's called EarthDollar.org. You ever heard such a thing?
No.
EarthDollar.org. And what it is that it's some real promoters seizing upon, keep the bison alive, save the bison, save a life. They've got these very environmental, really feely good, warm things they're putting out on those sites. But it's something a friend of mine pointed out to me today. It's cryptocurrency. It's a form of cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got to be a bit careful with these.
I know. It sounds like a hustle. I looked at the site, and it has all of these very hustles according to environmental and save the buffalo and, things like that. You know what I mean?
pyramid selling scheme.
I mean, it looks really suspicious. But it's
another basic news story which hasn't been covered much this week.
What's that?
Is from Ukraine. Is the pilot of the plane that apparently, according to the Russians, shot down the MH17. He killed himself. He was in charge of some kind of airfield. It was being rebuilt or restored or something, this airfield in Ukraine, and he was a former Ukrainian Air Force pilot. The Russians said, "You were the guy who killed."
Really?
The pilot. Because they were saying that, yeah, they were saying that he used either a missile or the cannon on the front of
the cannon fired on the outside of the structure of the plane, fuselage.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looked as if it had been the cabin had been hit by a cannon.
I see.
Right. You know, there's all sorts of other potential explanations for this, but you know, there's a very good Russian website. If you look for it, it's called Top Secret, and they identified this guy. Said, look, you know, we've been to Ukraine, we've got contact in the Ukrainian military. He was the guy who was flying a plane that shot the airline in Malaysia.
I see. Okay.
And now he's dead. So no inquiry from him. This is what I mean about the we were talking about the terrorists earlier. This is a really, really horrific trend, and we've got to do everything we possibly can to get our lawmakers and our law enforcement to not kill suspects. That's not what the police are there for. But anyway, so this guy's now dead, so there can't be a proper investigation into where he was at the time. It might even be that apparently he was very depressed and he committed suicide. So what made him so depressed? Was it the fact that he had this horrible attack on his conscience? We won't know now, except possibly by talking to some of his friends. But anyway, interesting that none of it is mentioned in the press, even though, of course, it's actually incredibly important. The deaths of these hundreds of people on this Boeing airliner, I think it was a Boeing, not an Airbus, I'm not sure, but you know, Malaysian Airlines should be making a big fuss about this, saying this is a terrible tragedy that somebody who could have been a witness as to what happened that day is now dead, but no one seems to mention it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so messed up sometimes, isn't it?
It's the terrible state of our journalism in the West, just as this Salisbury story is, and the complete failure to get the facts out to the public.
Well, Trump's administration was thinking about deporting, or you know what I mean, 24 envoys or something, expelling 24 envoys from Washington and so forth.
Well, that would be very unwise, and of course that's the purpose of all of them.
Right, break them up.
Yeah, I mean, calling Putin Hitler is not clever, right? It's something that Prince Charles actually did about 5 years ago, four years ago maybe. And I wrote an article about that called "Prince Charles Strikes Another Blow for the British Republic." Okay?
Yeah.
But calling Putin Hitler is not only incredibly stupid and insulting, it's also what you're doing is you're demeaning the millions of Russians that died.
Yes, they did. They did.
It wasn't America that defeated Hitler. It wasn't Britain that defeated Hitler. It was Russia that defeated Hitler. And in June 1944, when D-Day happened, and the British and the Americans landed in Normandy, really was just to stop Russia beating Hitler on their own. And to actually come in at the last minute, once Hitler was almost defeated by Russia, over the, was it 1942, right the way through 1942, right the way through 1943, and halfway through 1941, 2.5 years, the Russians were single-handedly, pretty much, taking Hitler on. From Barbarossa onwards, up until D-Day. And that whole business is now, if you sort of look at it from a modern perspective, all we did in D-Day, yes, we did actually have quite a fight in Western Europe, between June 1944 and the end of the Second World War in 1st of May 1945, so that was nearly a year of fighting. But we only came in to save the embarrassment of letting Russia beat Hitler on their own. And to then say that Putin is Hitler, just a minute, when this is such an insult, it's really a credit to the Russians that they don't react to that sort of disgusting statement made by a cowardly ignoramus like Boris Johnson, who pretends that he represents anybody but himself.
Yeah. I tell you something else. What else is going on? Anything new on any other fronts you can think of?
Well, just one other thing. I mean, there's those going on, George, as usual. But we've got in Bristol, they're talking about reintroducing European brown bears.
Really?
Which is, I mean, this whole rewilding agenda, right? Now, yeah. George Monbiot, the Guardian journalist, and others have been talking about this for a while. This again is Nazi stuff. And George.
Yeah. What were you saying now?
Well, because the Nazis did these kinds of things. They had a whole program for reintroducing wild animals, for reintroducing something called the Auerlach, which is a massive kind of island cattle looking bull, very powerful, very aggressive bulls. They wanted to bring them back. They also wanted to bring back wolves and bears or something. They were obsessed with wolves, actually, the Nazis. And so there is this kind of movement, and there's money behind it, to reintroduce these dangerous killer animals. And I just wonder whether anyone is going to mind when a child gets killed by one of these
animals. Right, exactly.
What is look, our ancestors weren't stupid. They wiped out these creatures because they're dangerous. And we can't have them just wandering around. On the other side of the spectrum, George, I noticed also Uber have just killed their first pedestrian, haven't they? Just as they're starting.
Yeah, that's right. A woman on pushing a bike or something stepped out in front of the Uber taxi. But it had a driver in there that was letting it automatically drive itself. But someone was in the front seat.
The whole idea of the driverless car is just, it's a license to kill.
That is no good. It's not going to work.
Computer. Completely crazy idea. And it's an obsession by the transhumanists. The idea is that actually everything can be automated. No, it can't. What you're doing is, you're not looking at what really makes human beings tick. And you cannot get a computer to have a conscience, to see someone step out, etc. You just can't do it. And these are going to be a complete disaster. The thing is, as well, also, we've got the CIA admitting that they want to use this technology to kill people.
Oh, yeah, they want robots out there, maybe robot cops, right?
Well, I'm also talking about making it look like an accident. So you or I could be driving down the road, George, and suddenly our car swerves when we're doing, say, whatever, 55 miles an hour.
And flips, yeah.
Smashes into a bridge abutment, and that car has been steered remotely by some CIA hacker.
Well, now,
that's what they want to do. They've admitted that they want to do that.
Well, they've got possible events that happened like that, didn't they, in this country? I mean, that's what they're saying. I mean, the suspect.
The death of Michael Hastings.
Yeah, Michael Hastings. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. His car just roared out of control and into a tree or to a lamppost or something.
80 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour limit with his foot on the brakes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I tell you, they do it scientifically these days, don't they?
I remember watching that video. I was amazed. It was a police video, and it was two squaddies sitting in a cop car, and then suddenly Michael Hastings' car whizzes past 80 miles an hour in front of them. Obviously, they then pull out. But when they slow the video down, you can see the poor guy's got his foot on the brakes.
Yeah, gah. I mean,
brake lights on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you can imagine what, I mean, this is insane. What we should do is, get under your car now and cut all those little cables So all you're doing is you've got an engine, maybe even go back and buy yourself a nice 1960s or 1970s.
Well, in this country, they didn't have it before the computer chips put in there.
Get yourself a 1970s Dodge Charger.
Right.
Whatever you have over there is a nice vintage 70s car.
Right.
Or Corvette Stingray.
Right, that'd be the one to have.
With modern cars, I think that there's a Trojan horse microchip in there that could potentially kill someone. Anyway, it's quite, I think, good to see that Uber. I mean, Uber are a particularly horrific company anyway. I mean, it's Deutschland Uber Alles.
Sounds like it, yeah.
The idea is they want to... They're anarcho-capitalists. They want to just smash their way through to getting a monopoly and chop through the law and use lawyers where necessary to get what they want and pay them fantastic fees. And if they don't win one case, they'll win another. They're just, incredibly aggressive company.
Yeah, they were monopolistic here in Austin, and they had to back off. The council ran them out, you know.
It's like having a military unit, trying to muscle its way in to the market. But look, you've had loads of stuff going on in Austin this week, George, so you've got to talk about that.
Well, we got that march today, but I haven't been down there. But the march for was it for Lives, LIVES, came out of Florida, Now, we've got some suspicious video out of Florida, okay? That shows four men coming out of the east entrance exit of that building 1200 after the shooter has gone. But CBS had a camera in a helicopter, and there's some very, very suspicious video that we have, okay? And there's four men coming out, and three are suited up in militaristic, outfits. Two are carrying a very heavy bag, one on each end of the bag, and they load it into a white pickup. And then they all get into the pickup and they drive off. There's a driver, a fifth person that's a driver. Very, very suspicious. We don't know what they were doing in there. Okay? But one of the teachers testifies that she saw a shooter dressed up in a military garb shooting a rifle that was very, she'd never seen that type of rifle ever before. Okay? So, and that's the same one.
There's quite clearly an attempt to sort of nobble the gun lobby. And, typical in the UK, most people in the UK think, oh, it's terrible to have guns.
Right.
I mean, I've seen, in the US, I've seen the arguments. I mean, I just think you should go with whatever people generally want, which is especially when you're
in Texas. We're gun rights here, I had guns at 10, 12 years old when safely handle them. Rifles, small rifles, 22s.
It becomes particularly important when you've got a tyrannical government. I mean,
exactly. That's what it's about.
It's not as tyrannical. It's almost containable here. God, I hope it is anyway.
Right.
In the US, it seems to be rife when you've got mafia everywhere. You've got FBI conducting attacks, supplying explosives, all this kind of thing. You've got a very, very fragile situation there. And the idea of just taking the guns off of all the people is almost like a temptation for the government to then go and put everybody in prison camps and criminalised. I mean, I noticed the other day, there's a tiny story saying that there's some legal changes in the US which mean that the federal government can come and take money off of suspects before they've even been convicted in court.
Well, they've been impounding equipment and cars and stuff for a while, see? And, go ahead.
George, I mean, there's no way a system can find you guilty before you've actually been found guilty. You know, you are innocent until proven guilty. And if you haven't been proven guilty, then you're innocent. And there's nothing the state should be able to do. And if they start doing it, then you know that you're on the road to tyranny. And that sort of state doesn't deserve any respect from its citizenry. So what is happening is the state itself is ripping up the rule of law. Not the people, the state is doing it. In which case, then you're starting down the road to civil war, where you've got a government that's at war with its own people. And that, you know, that starts the thin end of the wedge, is things like the government taking things off of people who are not convicted of anything before they've been to court, for example. That is the beginning of going down that road. But obviously it could get far worse, you know, with, you know, locking people up without trial, this sort of thing. You know, we've had that kind of thing in the past. I mean, we certainly have had it here in the UK, where the government just stops respecting the law.
When you provided in this country the ability for the authorities, the police, to confiscate property and impound it and so forth, that was the beginning of the end. You couldn't give the law enforcement or anyone like that the ability to profit from property taking from the criminals. You could, yet that was a problem. See, and they've expanded those and made violations there exist. See what I mean? So yeah. You can't. You've got to divide that from each other. You just can't. You have to do it legally with due process. You know, but Trump, what Trump said the other day, go out and arrest these crazies and then we'll do due process. He didn't have that even down right, you know. He's a mixed bag. He's not that highly principled. You know what I mean? And
I think Theresa May is even less principled.
Yeah, so.
She basically reads whatever script is stuck in front of her face. And she pretends to believe it. And amazingly enough, quite a lot of other politicians seem to go along with it. I think, you know, we've just got this horrific political system where having an independent mind is not respected anymore. And the idea of in politics is you just, basically you brown nose all, as much as you can. And if you brown nose the whole time, then maybe you'll get some more power. And that is a terrible, terrible system to be in. I mean, we have a press which is exposing and ridiculing politicians like that, rather than allowing them to just climb the greasy pole to power, which really allows the deep state. And this is what Theresa May is. She is the choice of the deep state. She's the choice of the MI5, the MI6, intelligence services. They're the people who are GCHQ. They're the people who they know she will do what she's told. There's another force, by the way, George, which is, I think, really important, which is the Council on Foreign Relations over there.
Yeah.
And the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London. These were all set up. They were funded originally by Cecil Rhodes, you know, the guy that founded South Africa and gave that to Rhodesia. And Cecil Rhodes left a whole load of money when he died. Alfred Milner as well is another guy involved in this. And Carol Quigley wrote about this in his book Tragedy and Hope.
Right.
And there's not many historians who really documented it, but he did. And they set up these organisations to funnel millions, in fact over the years of course it's billions of pounds of money that big corporations have avoided in paying tax into foreign policy. So that money is just chucked into the Chatham House coffers and the CFR coffers.
Right.
And then it's used to produce credible sounding arguments to destroy the next country in line. You know, now it's Russia. And you'll find magazines like Foreign Affairs, which is the CFR's magazine. The British Chatham House has an equivalent too. And they come out with all these articles which are trying to sort of, in a highbrow way, explain why I'm afraid we're just going to have to take on Russia. We can't allow them to carry on as an independent country, blah, blah, blah. And that, I think, is one of the most pernicious aspects to all of this, is that a lot of this just goes unchallenged. I mean, the BBC just put the people from Chatham House on as if they're the right people to talk to about foreign policy.
Well, the Economist magazine's right in the middle of that, too.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, that's the Rothschild thing out of the Financial Times conglomerate.
I interviewed a guy when I was over in Hong Kong called David O'Rear, and we used the interview last night on the radio here, which is it's a 25-minute interview all about Hong Kong being kind of surrounded by China and the encroachment of China at the moment upon the affairs of Hong Kong, which is actually quite tense there. And I spoke to you about this a few weeks ago. Anyway, you know, David O'Rear worked for 15 years for The Economist, and I could not find a single article by him in their archive. And I thought to myself, and suddenly it dawned on me, well, they don't credit their writers. So there'd be material by David that's published in The Economist, but it didn't have his name on it.
Right.
So he gave a fantastic, I thought, really good interview, very intelligent interview,
right,
about the umbrella protests, for example, in Hong Kong, and why they were actually immature. He was saying that the kids had not really thought through a practical way that they were going to get change. They were very idealistic, which was great, but they would realise that they'd have to compromise if they were actually going to get anywhere, and they just weren't prepared to do that. So they were immature politically. I thought that was a really good observation. And you know, there's various other things he says in the interview, which is it's up on YouTube now, and it was on the radio. We used it on the radio last night. But you know, he as an individual, he was working with The Economist, but he wasn't credited. You know, this I find unbelievable as a journalist.
Yeah.
How can you write a hard-hitting analysis and then be told, or be paid for it very, very well, I'm sure, by The Economist, and then be told, yeah, but your name's not going to be on it? I mean, this is the way they operate. Yeah. They're really sneaky, George.
Yeah, hey, Tony, give us your websites and everything. We're going to have to sign off here in about a minute. We've got a minute to go.
That's fine, yeah. You'll find all the latest from the radio show I do here. That's thisweek.org.uk. And there's also a link there to my rant I did, because I'm an ex-Salisbury reporter, about this Skripal affair in Russia,
okay,
explaining just how militarised up that part of the country is. I mean, it was the place that the Neolithic people in Britain decided to use as their defensive base. So it's not surprising to find the Ministry of Defence everywhere today, all over the place, around Salisbury. Salisbury Plain being the main training area for the military in Britain as well. So that's up on there, which is 20 reasons why the Skripal case is fake news, by ex-BBC Salisbury reporter, that's me. And that's at thisweek.org.uk, and you'll also find other of my material at bilderberg.org, and also at the 9/11 forum. That's 9/11forum.org.uk, where I'm just about to put up some material about the US biological weapons program around the world, which is pretty amazing research done by, I think she's a Bulgarian journalist. Some brilliant female journalists, but they don't seem to have been noticed by the feminist lobby for some reason.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, wrong politics. But thank you, Tony, very much. I appreciate your interview and your insights. Okay?
God bless everyone.
Okay, thank you. Good night.